Welcome to this week's episode of Golf's Fully Equipped, your go-to podcast for gear news, where we take what the tour players are doing and attempt to give it a spin to benefit the recreational golfer. Normally, we have the professor doing the intro each week, but he's busy conducting fittings, you know, the stuff that actually matters. So we're switching it up this week. I'm Jonathan Wall, managing editor for Equipment for Golf Magazine and Golf.com, and I'm joined for the first time by my partner in clubs. Yeah, I went there. Golf senior equipment editor, Andrew Tersey. Andrew, what's going on, man?
What's going on, fellow Bash brother?
I know. I can't believe it's the first time we've actually done a podcast, just you and me. We've been talking about it since you got started in January, but I know you've been pretty busy. We set you in motion and you've been cranking out the work.
Absolutely, man. Good to be part of the team. And finally, we're getting together on the podcast. As Bamberger called Jordan and Pippen of the golf equipment world.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know if I can really live up to the Jordan name, but I will certainly give it a try. I know you're going to do it for the Pippen. All right.
Yeah,
we got some pretty cool topics this week. I know you will. He's an all-around good guy. All right, we got some pretty good topics to get through this week. We got to talk about Patrick Reed and his irons. There was a little bit of confusion last week when he won with his irons. We'll get into that. Got to talk about bifurcation. You know, I wasn't on the podcast last week. It was you and the professor riding shotgun. And there were a couple of things that he said in regards to the distance report that I gotta clap back a little bit on it. And we got to get into Brandel. He's been on one recently on Twitter. And anytime Brandel's talking about stuff on social media, I think we've got to discuss it, especially when it pertains to gear. Rory McIlroy switching putter grips. He's been making a couple of changes here the last few weeks. Switched up the length, now the grip. Got to talk about that. You want to get into, and this is one of those things that I always kind of have trouble getting into, but my bag setup struggles as a lefty. You know, being a lefty golfer, I think it's gotten better with gear, but there are still some struggles. So I'll get into my bag setup. I know a lot of people over the years have been asking me what I have in the bag. So I'm finally going to divulge what I'm using at the moment. Not sure if that's going to change from week to week. Got a great gear question this week for the equipment mailbag. And we have an interview with PGA Tour winner Kevin Kisner. So it's going to be a great episode. All right, let's get into it, man. So Patrick Reed, he's using Grindworks irons. And these are irons that you actually, Andrew, had a chance to talk to Patrick about. I think you may have been the first one. This is when you were working for the PGA Tour. Had a chance to talk to him a little bit and also to the guys over at Grindworks about the irons. And, you know, for you and me, we're just kind of going about our business on Sunday. See Patrick Reed's bag, winner's bag comes out, you're filing copy. And I remember you gave me a phone call and you said, "Hey, do you know anything about these artisan irons?" And I kind of had to do a double take, man, because I was really confused. I actually spent some time with Mike Taylor in the last couple of weeks and Mike T didn't tell me anything. So there was a little bit of confusion going on there with these irons. And I think we kind of found out that it had to do with Daryl's survey, maybe making a mistake there.
Man, I was so confused because obviously you know how it is trying to get the winner's bag. You're talking to a bunch of different people. And I had two different sources tell me that Patrick Reed was playing artisan irons. And I was like, "Is that confirmed? Are you sure they're not Grindworks?" And they were like, I'm not throwing anyone under the bus here, but they both different sources, they said, "No, it's artisan." And I was like, no way. I know better. I was looking through Getty images as we do, zooming in, and it's like, no, those are the Grindworks irons that, you know, I talked to the club builder of the irons. You mentioned that I had broke the story open maybe a couple months ago. It was before January, before like he really said anything about them. I emailed just Grindworks. I found like a little contact us on the website, you know, doing my little
investigative. That's wild that you actually did it this way.
Yeah, doing my little investigative reporting.
Going down the rabbit hole.
Dude, I was down the rabbit hole so hard. But yeah, there was like nothing written about them on the internet at all. So I just went through a contact us button on the website and he told me all sorts of stuff about them. And, you know, when I saw the irons on Getty, I was like, those are the irons. I know more about these irons than anyone. There's no way they're artisan. And then, yeah, I had you hit up Mike Taylor, your boy. Shout out Mike, obviously great guy. And confirmed they were indeed not artisan. Although a couple media outlets that we won't talk about, they did report artisan, but they were definitely Grindworks.
So let's try and get into this a little bit, because I think people are probably curious, like how does this happen? So there is a company called Daryl Survey, and each and every week on the PGA Tour on Thursdays, they go through the tour players' bags. And there are some wild stories. You've probably heard them before, mm-hmm. guys. The Daryl Survey guy comes up, and he's got a little sheet, and he marks down every single club. So the heads and the shafts, even the grips.
Yeah, they're basically just with a clipboard on the first tee, right? Just asking everyone. Yeah.
Yep. First tee, and they're going through. Now that doesn't necessarily mean that the golf ball that they hand over to get logged in for Daryl Survey is actually the ball they're going to be using on the first tee. Because I do know some players that have handed over a golf ball or a driver, and the second the Daryl Survey guy walks away or girl, they've thrown a different club in the bag. It's happened.
And that's type stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it is. At the end of the day, they want to make sure that they're getting whatever manufacturer they're getting paid by. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to make sure that they're getting that on there, so they're not getting a phone call on Thursday or Friday saying, "Hey, why are you playing another manufacturer's driver?" It's usually driver, sometimes golf ball. But there are some pretty wild stories out there. I think what happened as far as the confusion here is Patrick Reed's Grindwork irons have, I mean, what is that? Is it like a hawk or something on a, I can't really like describe the logo that he's got.
Well, I know it's his logo. It's his logo. Like if you go on PatrickReed.com or whatever, like it's his logo, but people had always associated that logo with Artisan because Artisan was always making his custom wedges. So like when you see that logo, even me sometimes I'm like, oh, Artisan. It's like, no, it's not. It's just his logo.
So here's what it makes me wonder. If they got it wrong this week, how many weeks before Patrick won were they listing his irons as Artisan?
Right. Yeah. I don't have access to Daryl. I don't think this could be either.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we don't. So the only people that have access to Daryl are the manufacturers, and you have mm-hmm. to pay to get access. And the reason they do it is because if, you know, let's say Callaway wants to come out and say, we have the number one driver on tour for mm-hmm. this week, they're using Daryl Survey to back up that claim. So that's why all the manufacturers have access to Daryl, is because it allows them to make those claims and to make them accurate. So it is one of those things where from time to time there is confusion. And I guess whoever's been looking at his irons assumed that they were probably still Artisan if it had the same logo on the heads. But, you know, also as far as the confusion, you know, we know the irons are Grindworks, but you know, this is a company that I don't think a lot of people have heard about. What can you tell me about Grindworks and kind of what they're doing and why they partnered up with Patrick?
Okay, yeah. So I got like a super interesting response from the email. It was like, it was in a different language when it came through. So I just like translated it. And he basically told
you
me.
Wait, hold up. You translated it?
No, well, I didn't translate it. Like on Google Translate.
No, but I'm saying Japanese. Like you use Google Translator to translate it. That's pretty wild. I mean, people. Yeah. I think people think that like these stories when it comes to irons like Patrick Reed's are just kind of handed to us. But there are a lot of times where, I mean, I've made fun of myself for going down the Getty Images rabbit hole. I mean, you even said you just like found an email address and emailed them. There's a lot of grinding going on behind the scenes.
Oh, there's a lot
when it comes to these irons.
There's a lot of that. Like you might just hear something and then you have to confirm it with the player. Like there's no other way to go about it, or you got to go chase down someone from the company. Like this happens a lot, especially when you're chasing like stories about custom stuff, because you don't really know the story. But I emailed this guy and he actually responded pretty quickly. And he said, about one year ago, Patrick contacted me asking to try one of our products, but I preferred to offer him an original design set. And he said, he contacted me through email. I don't know how he found me. This is the guy describing.
That's what
like,
I'm saying. How did he find him through email?
He said, I don't know how he found me. He said that they were working with a couple USA brands like a long time ago, such as Ben Hogan, Titleist, Callaway, Cleveland, like back in the day. But so it's this guy, I don't want to mispronounce his name, but it's Kiyonari Nimi. And he's the CEO of Grindworks. And basically they put together like the dream team of custom club makers over there. It is... So Kobayashi, he was previously the president of Endo, which anyone who knows golf clubs knows Endo.
Anybody, yeah. Endo's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's a couple other guys, like 11-year industry veterans and guys that forge irons. So Patrick Reed, I guess he had either heard about it through someone or he knew the CEO. And he just reached out and they were like, yeah, we'll build you an all-custom set. Because he was saying that, Reed's lie angle is super flat and they didn't want to bend 4 degrees flat. So each iron has like a specific center.
Hold up,
four gravity.
Degrees flat?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm trying to read. So every single head has the center of gravity right in the center, which is what Reed wanted because he was saying that his previous set of irons, he felt like basically they were inconsistent. That he would always hit the center of the face and it was the club's fault, you know, if it hooked and missed the green or flared out to the right. Yeah, he was basically getting inconsistent results, wasn't able to trust his irons. And now with these grind works, he can trust the center of gravity and obviously they worked.
I mean, he's been playing well. He was playing well, going back to last year when he won Northern Trust during the FedEx Cup playoffs. So clearly he's onto something. You know, sometimes, and I don't know how you feel about this, when tour players say that they can feel these minute changes, you kind of go, I mean, yeah, right. You know, you can tell a difference between one driver and the next after hitting two golf balls. And then, of course, I go and watch a guy like Tiger or Justin Rose, some of these guys with hypersensitive feel. And you realize that they can tell a difference, even though sometimes it seems like marketing mumbo jumbo. It's real. These guys just, when they hit balls, is what they do for a living. They hit golf balls for a living, so they can tell these things. But yeah, you know, it just kind of goes to show you that if tour players really want something, even they're going to go to great lengths, just like you did, to try and find an email address to reach out to an off name manufacturer. I mean, Grindworks is certainly not one I think a lot of golfers are really aware of, but you know, now that Reed's winning with the irons, I think people are going to start to poke around and see if maybe they can pick up a set.
Yeah, that's kind of funny that me and Patrick Reed got in touch with Grindworks the same way. he just emailed them out of nowhere, out of the blue, and that's what I did too.
Patrick Reed and Andrew Tursky, they they go about their put on their pants the same way, reach out to Grindworks the same way.
Yeah, it's two peas in a pod.
Who knew?
Yeah, too funny.
All right, well let's get into this bifurcation talk. You know, for people that are, I'm sure they're aware by now, but the USGA rolled out a distance report. And, you know, for the most part, they didn't throw anything out there that was really concrete. This is pretty much a fluid situation. They're trying to find ways to, you know, try and make the golf courses and the equipment, you know, level the playing field a little bit. And one of the things they were talking about was maybe putting in a local rule at golf clubs. And this isn't something that they'd be putting in, I should say, but this is a local rule where if a club wanted to for a local competition, they could have their players play rollback equipment is what they were floating out.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard the professor mention the word bifurcation and my blood started to boil a little bit because, you know, I saw you laugh, but I saw you shaking your head.
Man, my blood was boiling too. Like, The points he was bringing up and trying to make, I mean, to me, were just, you know, kind of absurd.
Yeah. I mean, so I wanted to get my take on it a little bit, just so people know where I stand since I wasn't on the pod last week. But
right.
I am not in favor of bifurcation. I think, for one, this industry is just saturated with equipment. The last thing I think we need is for manufacturers to have additional SKUs, whether that's you know, drivers that are just for tour, the drivers that, whether they have smaller heads or whatever they're going to do to combat this, you know, distance that everybody thinks is such a big deal. You know, it, for me, I think if you're really going to look at ways to try and solve this problem, you don't really do it with the golf equipment. Because, I mean, why are we really talking about rolling the golf ball back? You know, you think about other sports. I mean, why do we want to go backwards? I don't really think that that's something that we want to do, because at the end of the day, what the USGA is talking about affects what, 0.1% of the golfing population, if that. I mean, it's so small. It's literally just the tour players that they're talking about here. So you can't affect the average everyday golfer here. And I understand that bifurcation is one way to do that. I think what you just do is, why don't you just grow the rough up and narrow the fairways and you know, change where the hazards are located. There are plenty of ways to do this where you don't have to change the equipment, because once you do that, I mean, we're going down that road now. And I'm not quite sure if, I mean, look, manufacturers, if they, let's say they bring out a golf ball that's rolled back, they're never going to sell that golf ball at retail. I mean, who's going to buy a golf ball that goes 20 yards shorter? Nobody. Nobody's going to buy a golf ball that goes 20 yards shorter. So I'm so with you.
I'm more laughing that it's like, you know, I'm trying not to like kick down anyone's opinion, but it's just like, I just don't see why and how. Like, what's the reason to roll it back? And then how would it possibly be executed? Like, those are two huge questions that I really haven't seen like a great answer.
I'm with you there, because I haven't seen a good answer either. And people are saying that the most logical would be to roll the golf ball back.
Mm-hmm.
But here's my problem with that is, all these manufacturers that are out there, they all have proprietary technology with their golf balls. So if you roll the golf ball back and you're trying to level the playing field, like, how do you do that in a way where all the manufacturers are using the same golf ball? I mean, is everybody manufacturing a golf ball that's made the exact same way? You can't really have like one golf ball for tour events, because who's making that golf ball? Because whoever's making it is benefiting from it directly. And all the other manufacturers that aren't, I mean, you can't claim that you have a ball out on tour. So there's such a slippery slope here where I don't really know if there's a way to do this where everybody still feels like they're making money here. Because at the end of the day, that's important. You know, these manufacturers are in this business to make money. And the only way you're going to do that is by promoting the stuff that guys are using out on tour. Because whether you like it or not, what the players are using, everybody out there is watching golf on television for the most part on Sunday afternoons. And you're probably curious, at least when a guy wins, what he has in the bag. I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, you are. So it's kind of one of those situations where I think it's such a difficult question to answer at this point. Is how do you do it in a way where everybody still benefits? And I think that's maybe why the USGA has been, they really have, I mean, look, they didn't involve the manufacturers in the process. I talked to a couple manufacturers that said they received that distance insight report 30 mm-hmm. minutes before it came out to everybody else. So it's not like they've been involved in this. I think they're probably going to get a seat at the table at some point, but what that looks like, I think is anybody's guess.
So it seems like we're on the same side of this argument. And I know some people listening are going to be like, well, you guys are equipment writers. Of course, this is going to be your take. You know what I mean?
But, for sure. We're going to get
roasted. But on the flip side, and thinking about this logically, if we're equipment guys and our job is to write about equipment, wouldn't the biggest story be bifurcation? You know what I mean? Like, that's great content to write about. But as a golfer and a golf fan, and just like thinking about it realistically, I just don't see it happening. And I don't see why. Like, people are saying that like the scores are too low and what? Golf courses are not hard enough? Like, there's plenty of weeks that out and the scores are like similar to what they shot in the 70s and 80s and 90s. It's not like 35 under par wins every week. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you think there's validity on the other side of the argument?
I think there is to some extent. You know, the bomb and gouge era that we're in right now, I think sometimes you can watch a golf tournament and you see these guys going super low and it can get a little bit boring. I think, you know, for a couple of weeks out of the year, regular golfers love to see the tour pros struggle And we get to see that at the U.S. Open. Sometimes we get to see it at the Open Championship if the weather cooperates. But they like to see that these guys are human. And sometimes when they're hitting 350-yard drives and consistently having, you know, flip wedges into greens, that's not human. I mean, that these guys are, I mean, they're superhuman at times. And I think people kind of go, well, doesn't that make golf courses obsolete? Well, I mean, yeah, to some extent it probably does, because when you're able to cut corners that no average golfer can cut, it can make the game look incredibly easy, and maybe people just want to see him struggle a bit. But isn't that about
course selection from the tour though? Like, they can find
quirkier
golf courses that have crazy dog legs. Like, I play muni golf courses all across the country, and I've played some of the most difficult golf courses that would never host a U.S. Open. They're just munis. But it's like, you could throw one of those in, two of those in, have it be a tour stop. I think that would be pretty good for viewing. I would tune in to watch them play muni.
Oh, for sure. I mean, and I don't even think that you have to change the venues up that much. I think all you got to do is firm the golf course up. You know, I think for the most part, if you look at some of these tour layouts, a lot of them, the greens are incredibly soft. You see guys sucking golf balls back all the time. It's not often that they're playing a really firm golf course. You know, a couple times a year. I know the Players Championship, typically they have the golf course playing, as close to like major championship conditions. And a couple of times it's almost kind of gotten away from them over the years, where the greens have gotten baked out. And there are a few tour stops where the golf courses, I feel like, bite back a little bit. But for the most part, yeah, we're used to seeing birdie fests. And
I think Riviera was a pretty good case. Riviera got pretty firm. Wind was up, and it was like super entertaining. It was a great challenge. It was rough timing for the bifurcation crowd, I think, because it was such an entertaining, great event and good challenge.
You know who's on our side in all this is Brandel Chambly, who's been on one.
Woo.
as the kids say. Man, he loves to stoke the fire, but he certainly is, I would say, anti bifurcation. And I'm pretty sure you'd agree.
Yeah, I would definitely say that's his take. So he's kind of attacking woke Twitter. Can you kind of explain? Can you explain to people who might not be on Twitter what "quote unquote" woke Twitter is?
I do. I'm way too old. I have three kids. I can't even describe. All I know about woke Twitter is they like to come up with hot topics all the time, and it's usually stuff that's going against the grain,
right?
And sometimes they're right. I would have to agree with, but other times I feel like they're just trying to take the opposite side, just because they don't want to conform to conventional norms.
Right. Well, I think like woke Twitter in this case would be people that are like super passionate about golf course architecture, but they hold like really old golf architecture in high regard. So they don't like the modernization of the game. They don't like all the equipment. They'd rather see, persimmon clubs and playing courses from the 50s type thing. Like if they could play like the Buck Club and Marion and stuff like that every week,
the Buck Club doesn't even exist yet. I love Zach Blair, and he's created an unbelievable brand with the Buck Club, but I wonder how many people actually think the Buck Club is really exists. But yeah, no, I mean, that's kind of what it is. Although I will say this, I think it would be cool, and I don't know where you stand on this. I think it'd be cool if they had a throwback tournament once a year. Make the pros play persimmon. I think that, for people that want to go back to Balata golf balls in persimmon clubs, I think maybe we just do a throwback tournament once a year.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be the norm. Do it once a year. Like, viewership on that would be so hot. I would watch that. I would watch every single shot of that. Be so entertaining. But let me get into some of these Chambly tweets. Let me just pull it up. Okay. He's responding. Like, people are kind of attacking him, they know that he's going to respond, and he is responding.
I'm shocked that people are attacking Brandel Chamblee on social media.
So he says, you think any of these golf course architect geeks pining for a rollback are independent and thinking for themselves? Their quote-unquote Wally Ulon is Alistair McKenzie, which is like letting Amelia Earhart convince you that a compass is better than GPS.
Oh, I love Brandel. He says it better than anybody else, and then he always gets everybody going.
Yeah. The problem with arguing with Chamblee is that, like, he's not only so strong in his opinions, it's that he's so well-researched, and he, like, has things to back him up. Like, he's coming with graphs and charts and stuff like that, which if you have Twitter, just log on to Brandel Chamblee's page. You don't have to follow him. He's public. Just, you know, you can go look. But he's got a bunch of stuff going on. It's really entertaining. So if he doesn't like what you're saying,
he'll just block you.
Yeah, he'll block you. He'll let you know about it. He'll respond. So drama.
All right.
Drama in the bifurcation world.
Yeah, I know. There always is. And listen, I don't think it's going away anytime soon. I think this is going to be fodder for us to discuss for at least the next, I'd probably say the next couple of years, until the USGA figures out what route they want to go. All right, let's get into Rory making another putter change. You know, last week the professor said that when you make a change, you should stick with it for 30 days before deciding whether you should stay with it or go with something else. Rory McIlroy is not listening to the professor. Did not heed his advice. So he switched to a 35-inch putter the week prior at Genesis and promptly went back to 34 inches. It's actually kind of an interesting story as to why he went to 35. Rory said that he started to notice at Torrey that his right arm was getting a little bit high and it was causing his right shoulder to kind of roll over. And going to 34 got his elbow in a better position, got him back more on plane. Well, Rory almost won at Riviera with that 35-inch putter, but promptly went back to 34, and he actually had something interesting to say. Somebody asked him in Mexico if he had won, would he have gone back to 34 inches? And Rory said, yeah, things were just kind of feeling off. He would have gone back even if he won, which I call pulling a Hideki, because Hideki Matsuyama a few years back went I think that was like a record score on tour when he went nuts at the Bridgestone in Akron. Yep. And he was using a TaylorMade putter that week and promptly went back to a Scotty Cameron the week after his big win. So that's why I call it pulling a Hideki. But
well, me and you are out on tour a bunch. We work like the same beat. So you know,
yeah,
every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Hideki's testing probably 8 to 10 different putters,
oh,
and they're all like
easy
custom Scotties and prototype TaylorMades and stuff.
He usually has almost enough putters to make a full bag. He could go out and play a round of golf with putters. I mean, it truly is that many, and there's usually always a couple of gems in there that we haven't seen for a little while.
Yeah,
and I think that's why we always enjoy. I mean, Hideki by far has more putters than anybody else. I think DJ probably, would you say, comes like a close second. He typically has like at least like two or three, maybe four in the bag.
Yeah, Hideki's Hideki's a distant one on changing putters, and then Dustin's second. But Hideki, he'll come with like three sets of irons, 14 wedges, six drivers. Like, he has a backup bag. He comes with a backup bag, and then he has a Sunday bag too, and they're all full of clubs. It's the craziest thing ever. But anyway, back
good,
to Rory.
Good thing they're just putters, so his caddy doesn't get confused and show up with a backup bag on the first tee on Thursday.
Yeah, I'm surprised that's never happened, honestly. But
anyway. So he went back to 34 inches in Mexico, but he made an interesting change. He switched. I would call it like your standard TaylorMade red cap grip. I think people that know TaylorMade putters, it's the standard rubber grip, pistol shape. Mm-hmm. That comes on a lot of the retail versions of the TaylorMade putters. He switched that one out for a Lampkin Sync Fit Skinny Grip. And the reason that he went to this new grip was because he said it was slightly thicker. And he said that because it was thicker, it got his hands facing each other more, and it helped tuck that right arm in a little bit. And that gets his arm on the shaft clean, so he's able to stroke it better. I actually looked just because, you know, this is the nerd in me to see. So the SyncFit Skinny pistol grip has a core size of 0.58 inches, which, you know, these thinner grips, I mean, there's not a whole lot of a difference between from one to the next. But again, kind of going back to what we discussed with just guys like Patrick Reed noticing a little bit of a difference if you sift the CG on an iron. It, you know, sometimes it doesn't take much for these guys to notice a difference. So maybe it was just a touch thicker for Rory, and that was enough for him to make the switch. But new grip, old length. He actually putted pretty well. I was looking at his stats. He was, I mean, for a guy who is kind of up and down with the putter, he was 22nd last week in strokes gained putting. But a lot of it was that very first round where he was plus 3.6. So gaining more than 3.5 shots on the field with the putter. If Rory McIlroy was doing that on a regular basis, he'd be boat racing the competition. So curious to kind of see where Rory goes with the putter grip, whether this is something that he sticks with, especially with the Masters now coming up quickly, or if he goes back to something standard, because it sure does seem like he's searching a little bit with the putter. Definitely not putting as well as he did last year.
You were going down the rabbit hole, weren't you? Looking at exact diameters of grip sizes.
Looking at diameters of grips. I was trying to find the I was trying to find the exact specs on the TaylorMade one to see how much of a difference there was. You know, again, this I want to know. I mean, I want to know what the difference is between these two grips, because when he says that it's thicker, I mean, one of the things that I was going through Lampkin's website, mm-hmm. and it says on their website, it says as the thinnest grip in the SyncFit line. And so I'm like, all right, so this is already being promoted as the thinnest grip, yet Rory says that it was actually slightly thicker than the one that he was using. So yeah, man, I'm always going down those crazy rabbit holes whenever it comes to this stuff. But hey, if it's working for Rory, I'm sure somebody saw, I posted the name of the grip, and I would not be surprised if Lampkin sold some more grips over the weekend with Rory using the new one.
It was a custom made for TaylorMade Lampkin, right? Like it said TaylorMade on the grip, didn't it?
Yeah, it said TaylorMade on the grip, but it's one of those kind of made for TaylorMade, you know. So, but I don't think I've ever, the weird thing was, is I don't think I've ever seen that grip before.
Yeah, I had to go back. I was looking on Chris Trotty's Instagram, and I went back. It was probably 2018 or something like that. He posted a photo of the grip.
See, you're going down the rabbit holes too, man. It's not just me.
I know. We both do the same thing. It's just, you know, I don't get into like diameters as much as you.
All right, here we go. You're gonna get on to me about trying to fit. I'm just trying to give the people what they want. If there's a difference, I want them to know what it is. But bottom line, Rory switch putter grips. I got a little bit too excited about it, which that's not a big surprise for people, even when the big names are making a small change like that. So kind of going to just see what happens with that. I think it's certainly something to keep tracking, again, as I mentioned, as the Masters gets close, whether Rory decides to go back to the old grip or stay with the new one because it's helping him with his stroke. But all right, let's get on to a topic I do not like to talk about. People ask about it all the time. You want to know what's inside my golf bag right
yep.
now.
This was my addition to the podcast.
It's a bunch of golf clubs at the end. Yeah. Yeah, I know.
I don't think I've ever seen like your actual setup. So
the reason is because it does, or I shouldn't say that. It used to change a lot. And I would probably say a couple of years ago, I decided to just stop making changes.
How much is a lot?
It got bad. I was probably using at least a new bag setup almost every time I went on the golf course.
Oh no.
Yeah. I mean, I was in it bad. Oh, no. Well, because here's what happens. And I think a lot of people realize this because we do equipment for a living, but manufacturers send you product, and I at least, you know, I'm not going to play everything, but I at least want to test it and see what happens. So every time out, I'm testing a new driver, new set of irons, new set of wedges, new putter, and just kind of trying to go through the rotation to at least see what the product does. So when people ask me, I can give them something beyond what's on a press release. And then a couple of years ago, I was on the struggle bus big time and just decided, you know what? It's just not worth it. I can't keep changing out gear all the time. I'm going to go take the product to the range. I'll hit it there. If there's anything that intrigues me, I'll take it out on the golf course and play with it for a little bit, but I'm not going to change unless I take the time to get on a launch monitor and see what the numbers are, try it with the normal shaft I use. And I think this kind of goes back to what Tim and I have talked about is get with a club fitter and really work your way through your product. Do some serious head-to-head testing. Don't just pull out a driver and hit it and think that it's better than what you currently have in the bag. Because more often than not, it is you might get a little bit of a bump, that like 18-hole bump where you think that you figured it out with a new club, and then the next time you go out and play and struggle hard. So, all right, what do I have in the bag currently? I will say the driver right now is a big solid TBD. I was playing a TaylorMade M5 with an Aldila NV2K XV green shaft.
And well, you got the weights in the head. Where are the weights in the head?
Weights in the head. Oh, okay. So the weights in the head are kind of the
these are the important questions to ask, J-Wall.
I know. So I had the Rory setting for a little bit with the weights cranked to the heel and to the toe to get more forgiveness. So, you know, again, I think everybody just expects that as equipment riders, we play a ton of golf. I do not. I have, I try and get out when I can, but I spend more time on the range than I do on the golf course. And that's just, it's part of dad life, I think, just not having a ton of time to get out and play. So the more forgiveness I can get.
Executive course.
Yeah. But you know, I kind of like the way that it is right now, because I think my practice sessions are a whole lot more productive now than they ever have been, because I don't just have all this free time to go bang golf balls on a driving range. So when I go out there, I typically have a plan in place, stuff I want to hit, and I usually will have some sort of a launch monitor with me just to check numbers and you know, I'll go through product, but yeah, when it comes to the driver, I've actually really pushed this setting on buddies of mine, which is if you've got a driver, you know, TaylorMade has that T-Track system where you can crank the two weights into the heel and the toe. I'm all for more forgiveness, man. You know, anything to help mitigate those misses off the heel and the toe, I'm gonna take it, because I don't hit the center of the face as often as I used to. So that's what I'm going with the driver right now. I've tried out the Maverick product, the Sub-Zero. And I've also tried out I've tried out a lot of drivers, but right now I think the Maverick's one that I'm strongly considering. I just haven't had enough time to test it. Sim Max is another one that I've also really liked. Cobra, it's like I could just keep going. Cobra was.
Are you
going to
name every manufacturer? This is a cop out answer.
I'm already going back to my old ways with just naming them all. But you know, it was the Cobra one
is real.
So here's what happened. The Cobra one was the one that really threw me for a loop, because it wasn't until we went to South Korea and we started testing product on the robot, and I realized that the ball speed numbers going off the center and off the toe were like almost identical, which you almost never see the deltas that tight on a center hit and a miss hit. And so I'm like, oh man, well, I do miss it off the toe sometimes, so maybe I got to try that one. And then I went and hit the SimMax product, and all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, this is a good product too. And then it's like the Callaway product gets in there. So that's why I say it's a big TBD, because I think I'm probably going to just stick with my M5. It's been a good driver unless something just blows me away. But the interesting change isn't so much the head, it's the shaft. I was an NV 2K XV green guy for a while. And then I saw my spin numbers when I was working with Tim were probably like 1700. And I don't think I realized how low they were at that time. So I'm now working with a Fujikura Ventus 6X, the blue, not the black. And
you
I think
and everyone
I'm
else
that
in the world
it's
right now, man. That's a popular shaft
I think
out
I'm just
on tour right now.
Yeah, it's a popular one. I think I'm just learning that I'm okay with going with something that's a little bit less like a telephone pole and something that I can just turn over a bit more. So that's with the driver. I've got a Ping G400 3-wood. And transition straight into a Ping i500 3-iron with a hazardous black shaft. That club right there is probably my MVP.
You said your MVP?
It's my MVP by far.
Most valuable
I love
ping?
That golf club. If I'm struggling off the tee, I use that one pretty much. I mean, it's just like low bullets. I don't really ever have to worry about it. I use it off the tees or from the fairway trying to reach par fives. It's so versatile, and you know, it's one of those clubs. I think everybody needs that one at the top of the set that you just don't really have to worry about when things are going sideways. And, you know, it doesn't, it's not a, you know, it's not a 275 yard three wood or anything like that, but it, I can still get that one out there. Probably, I'd probably say like 235 if I'm going after it.
Okay.
And I mean, that's something that if I'm, it's a fairway finder. I mean, I think everybody needs one of those. So that's my kind of top of the set. I go straight into irons that I just haven't been able to find a better product out there. The Schrixon, the Z785s. Mm-hmm. I've got a 585 in the 4-iron, and then I transition right into the 5 through P, and then go straight from there into Vokey. I've still got the SM7 wedges in the bag right now. And putter, you know, that's kind of one of those toughies. I've got, kind of like you, you wrote a story here recently, which I absolutely love, talking about a old Scotty Cameron putter, Tirelium, that even though you haven't had a whole lot of success with it, you've kept it in the bag. I've got one of those. It's an old Scotty Cameron Newport, and it's probably not the best putter for me. I've gone back and forth between that and a Spider, TaylorMade Spider, but for whatever reason, I keep going back to the Newport, even though it's probably not the best option for me. The one change I will say that I did make is I changed up the iron shafts that I've been using for years. I went from True Temper's Dynamic Gold X100 right into S400 in my wedges. I just like a little bit of a softer feel in the wedges. And then I got with the professor and made a change and went to Obon. Which,
wow.
I don't know about you. Have you ever tried out an Obon shaft before?
I got to be honest, man. I don't change shafts too much in the irons. I've just gone between Project X65s and X100s, yeah. And that's like pretty much it.
Yeah. So that was for me. Like I'd played the X100 Tour Issues for, mm-hmm. I mean, I can't even remember when I first started it. It's been so long.
Yeah.
But I went from the 130 gram X100s, and Tim and I were just working on irons, and he's like, I just want you to try this. He didn't really give me a lot of info on it. And it's a 115 gram product. It's a whole lot lighter, and lighter for me has always been an issue, because anytime somebody tells me that something is lighter, I automatically feel like my transition is going to be off.
Right.
And
it's not words you want to hear.
Yeah, exactly. Like transition is huge. And that's one of the reasons why you should know your swing weight. Because if you start messing with swing weight, that's going to mess with your transition. And I decided to just give it a shot. And lo and behold, dispersion got tighter, and actually didn't feel the lighter weight as much as I thought I would. And so I just decided to give it a shot. And so far, so good. But for me, I don't think I've ever really talked too much about this, but back in high school, I shattered my left elbow in basketball practice. It was a really nasty injury. And I've started to notice over the last like 5 years that I've started to get like this early onset arthritis in my elbow.
Oh, no.
So going to a lighter product, in this case steel, I've tried graphite, I just can't get used to it, but it actually helps. You know, lighter product, it's not as heavy, it's not gonna put as much stress on your joints. So probably something I should have gone to a little while back. But That is my setup for now. It is, I should probably say everything is TBD, because it could change at some point if I find a better product. But that's what I'm looking at with my current bag setup for everybody that's been asking me. I feel like I've been asked that question at least 10 different times over the last few years.
I get it. I asked you too. That's smart. You're taking the precautions with the graphite shafts. I think that's something people need to keep in mind. You know, you got to take care of your body. Don't put too much stress. Even if you've been playing X100 since you were 12 years old, you know, that's why technology is there. It's to help you out.
And you have to think about like today's graphite iron shafts compared to what was, you know, designed, you know, a decade ago. Today's stuff is so much more consistent than any of the graphite products. Night and day. Exactly. Yeah. That's, and I think that's where you're able to get similar feel. A lot of these graphite products are now pretty close to the same weight that you're going to get in a steel product. They could never really do that before. And they have the, they have similar properties. So you're not going to get a, as big of a change. Plus, you think about it. If you are a guy that's playing golf, let's say like 3 to 4 times a week, and you're on, let's say, you know, 50 plus, this is something where if you're banging balls on a range trying to get better, this is going to help you when you're talking about your recovery. Because whether you know it or not, if you're using steel shafts, that's sending some pretty negative vibrations up into your arms and into your body, and it actually fatigues your body. I didn't really think this was a thing until I started hitting golf balls, and you played golf collegiately, and you know, it's, you start hitting a ton of golf balls, your body gets tired. And I've tried it before. Just hit graphite and then go hit steel and see how better your, how much better your body feels when you finish up. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to switch to graphite, but at least I'm going to something lighter in the steel product. And I feel like that's at least going to kind of help extend my, my game. So maybe I'm not feeling like I have to pop a couple Advil after every round.
I hear that. I got wrist injuries and back injuries and all sorts of stuff going on. I know the stress.
I know, because didn't you play lefty for a little while?
Yeah, I did for like a year and a half, and I'll still go to the range or play golf. Like, my friends think it's a cool party trick for me to switch it up mid-round. So I'll still bounce around going lefty. So I do know the struggles of trying to buy lefty equipment, because when I first switched, I wasn't like, I'm about to spend $2,000 on a new set. I was like, I'm just going to go on eBay, try to keep it under like 350, you know, because it was more of just a, I thought it was just going to be a month, try to break 100 real quick. So I went into the used section of the local store, and it was really eye-opening, because, you know, you go in there as a righty, you got racks and racks and racks and racks of options. You go into the lefty used section.
Oh, yeah, they just throw it in your face.
There was one wedge. It was a...
one wedge and one loft and one grind?
It was a Callaway Sure-Out 64-degree wedge. I'm not kidding. And then they had one...
Well,
like,
I guess if you're trying to play lefty for the first time, that's probably not a bad wedge to have.
No, I bought it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you probably picked it up.
It was a savior, actually. I could almost take a full swing around the greens, just make sure I'd really get into the turf and ball just pop right up. And then they had like a Cleveland high bore 21 degree hybrid or something like that, and I was like, nah, I'll take the Sure-Out and leave.
That's a pretty eclectic bag. I dare say that's A-Rod-esque. If people if people saw the what's in the bag we put up on A-Rod's golf clubs, you'll get that joke.
A-Rod, oh my god, that putter, like, I need that putter, the baseball bat.
Ooh, oh man,
that's one to have in the collection.
Jeez. Yeah, it's also,
where did he
super
get that thing?
I have no idea. Yeah, well, I would love to know. I will tell you,
made by Louisville.
My struggles as a lefty, the one set of clubs that I always wanted but never was able to get because they never made them in left-handed, which I'm kind of surprised, because while U-Line is a lefty, and I always figured that whatever Titleist rolled out would come in lefty eventually, Titleist 990Bs. I had the 990s. The B version was a smaller profile, a little less offset. And I was in high school at the time and was like dying to play the B version, and they never came out in lefty, and I was so pissed. Oh man,
it doesn't seem like you've gotten over it still.
Oh no, I haven't. I still feel like the golf gods were just like spiting me by not bringing out the B version. I always think that I probably would have like made pro and won the Masters if I had the Bs. If only you had the Bs, man. That was the one set. But you know, the good thing is that they come out with more lefty options now than they ever did. I used to always get onto Mizuno because they never came out with a lefty blade. It was always just righty after righty. And every time I'd get some sort of info on the new product, I'm like, well, it's not coming out in lefty. And I know this year they came out with a lefty version of their irons. I know there are a bunch of guys out there that are southpaws that were pretty happy to have a set of legitimate blades from Mizuno, but it's gotten better. It's never going to be as good as it is on the right-handed side. And that's why, when my wife and I had kids, I told her, I'm like, look, I'm just going to make them all right-handed, because I don't want them to have to struggle through the same issues that I had. It's just, it's not worth it. Let them be righty and enjoy all that sweet, sweet equipment.
I'm going to make them right-handed.
Make them right-handed. That's right.
And then they'll be ambidextrous if they're actually lefty.
I got to do is just do the opposite of Phil. You know, Phil learned because he just was like using his dad as a mirror image. And mm-hmm. that's how he learned how to be lefty. I just figured I'd just do the same thing, just mirror image, except they'll just learn how to be righty by, although I don't know if they want to mirror my golf swing. So that might not be a very good idea. All right.
All right. Well, let's get into the mailbag. This week's question comes from an anonymous user. And they ask, if you could switch bags, like switch golf clubs with anyone on tour, who would it be? And I'll let you take the stage. This is tough. I got to think about it. I don't have an answer prepared, unfortunately.
Oh, see, so I'll let you fire I've already got an answer. I've already got an answer for this one.
Oh, you did your homework. All right, let it rip.
It's for obvious reasons a little bit, but I'll take Tommy Fleetwood's golf bag.
Ooh.
I think it's a nice, like, we talk all the time about trying everything that's out there. And Tommy's got a pretty diverse golf bag. He's got a lot of tailor-made product in there. He's got the Sim driver right now, and I know he's got an M6-3 wood and 5 wood. But he goes from there, and he's got two Srixon Z785. Now, obviously, those are the irons that I play. But he's got the 4 and the 5 iron. And then he goes from there into the P7TW 6 through 9. Yeah. Now,
His
are super clean because he got rid of all of the paint fill on his irons. So I would say they're probably cleaner than T-dubs. I can't believe I said that, but I do. I think they're cleaner than Tigers without the paint fill.
You better be careful.
There is one question that I would ask, and I haven't talked to Tommy about this, but I'm curious how he was able to gap these irons because the Z785s are a little bit on the stronger side. And I wonder what the gapping is between that 5-iron and 6-iron, because I mean, you know, this, those P7TWs are more traditional specs. I mean, Tiger plays irons on the weaker side. Mm-hmm. So what are his loft gaps there? I'm kind of curious, but I do like that setup. The Z785s, you got some forgiveness there at the top of the set, going right into those P7TW blades. He's got the SM7 raw wedges. I actually play the raw version of SM7. I think maybe that's why I love his golf bag, is he's got a lot of product that I currently play, but it's diverse, and you can tell that he's been doing his homework. He's a free agent, which means that he's able to play whatever he wants to play. His White Hot Pro number 3 putter is something similar. I think if I was going to find a blade putter, I'd probably find something with a flow neck. I putt well for whatever reason with the Spider, but I think it's because it's got that little slant neck on it. So I'll say Fleetwood's bag, just again, because there's a lot of stuff that I can relate to because it's in mine, but he's got a good mix, and I think that's important.
When it comes to the putter, you're not going with the one that he stole from his caddy's garage?
That little, the two ball, the one that his caddy, yeah, Ian Finnis drew the sight line on the top with a Sharpie. That's impressive that he just did that freehand.
I know, that's a cool little story. That's a great choice. Kind of jealous I didn't think of that and go first. But yeah, for this question, I mean, you have to go with the free agent just so you have the flexibility of, you know, playing whatever you want. So that doesn't leave me like a huge pool of guys anymore. Probably not going with Patrick Reed. As much as I like Koepka's setup, I've actually sneaky never been a Mizuno iron guy. I've just never like played them, and I'm not, I guess, part of that cult like following of Mizuno. I've never super gotten into it. So I'm going to go with Daniel Berger.
Daniel Berger. Wow. That's, I was not expecting that one. I got to hear what's the reasoning behind this?
Okay. So one, he has the super cool all red, two ball putter.
That is a great putter.
Which I, which I love.
Totally custom.
It's like super custom. No one else has it. Very cool. Then he has the TaylorMade Tour Preferred Irons, which the story behind that's awesome. He played them in high school. I've always been into playing like older irons for whatever reason. I guess I'm part of like woke golf Twitter. But
you didn't know, but you are. You're part of woke golf Twitter. Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah. And then I don't know exactly what he's doing with his woods at the top of the bag, but I like it. Like, I like that he's kind of switching it up and testing things around right now, and he has that freedom to be able to do it, to move and shake through different companies. So, really, for those three reasons, I'm going to go with Daniel Berger.
I like that one. You know, his irons, yeah. Those MCs that he's played are classic. I can't tell you how many guys, after you broke that story, how many guys came out and said, like, oh, I still play those irons, or oh, I've got a set in my golf locker. That's, you can tell when a set of irons from, you know, say like 8 to 10 years ago are still pretty popular, when a whole bunch of guys on social media start claiming that they've got a set somewhere.
And right. They must have like sold out on eBay right after that story.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it's probably because Daniel Berger bought all of them.
Right. he was in the comments section of our Instagram.
He was. I couldn't believe it.
Buying a Tour Preferred. It's so funny.
He's buying irons in the Instagram comments part of our post we made on the story after you talked to him. And he's buying up sets of irons from guys that are telling him he's got sets. And I wonder how many of those guys really had sets and how many just wanted to get a response from Daniel Berger.
Right. Became like a joke at that point. But shout out Daniel Berger. Super funny, man.
All right, so I pick Fleetwood, you pick Berger. I think they're both good choices, which leads us into this week's interview. I know you recently had the opportunity to talk to Callaway staffer and PGA Tour winner Kevin Kisner about his gear. Kis is a pretty laid-back guy, and as I think you'll find out, he's got a fun approach when it comes to his gear. Enjoy the interview.
Kevin Kisner, welcome to the Golf.com's Fully Equipped podcast. We mostly talk about gear, but I want to talk a little bit about this bocce ball game that you got set up with Michelle Wee and Amanda Balionis this afternoon. What's that about?
Well, we always end our Callaway photo shoots and video shoots with a little something fun whenever I'm around. I like to be entertained, so they always come up with something fun to end it with. We're going to see what these two girls are made of. I'm not sure if they can hang with us around beer games.
You get the trash talk going with them?
100%, probably more than anyone. I'll definitely be all over them from the get-go.
Yeah, and I understand you like to have the last slot in these ad shoots.
I'm always last. I don't even have to ask what time anymore. They just put me in. They know I like to have a cold beer at the end of the day, so they have them ready during the end. I think they all appreciate it after dealing with all these tour pros all day.
Yeah, right. Are you going to make Amanda drink for two, since Michelle Wee, congratulations to Michelle Wee if she's listening, but on the fresh pregnancy?
No doubt. She's got to hopefully shotgun two back-to-back, and I'll walk off a winner straight back to my car.
We'll have to stick around for that entertainment. So you're just getting back from Hawaii, where you played pretty well.
Right. Yeah, it was a big two-week stretch. We were over there for almost 3 weeks, so glad to be back on the mainland. It was a tough couple weeks with the weather, probably the worst I've ever seen in my time going over there. Tons of wind and then rain all week long in Honolulu. Mm-hmm. The golf course has played dramatically different, way softer than I've ever seen them, so the scores weren't as low as I expected with the soft conditions, and that just tells you how much the wind was blowing.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're here at the Maverick Tour launch at Palm Desert. I know that you don't really like to switch into new equipment. I mean, I'm looking at your bag. It's all old. Even the Apex Pro irons are, you know, the older versions, not the newer. Would you say that you are, like, reluctant to switch into new equipment?
Or? Yeah, I'm a hard guy to switch. You know, I like to know exactly what my equipment's doing. And, frankly, I don't have enough time at tour events to put the testing in. So I like to do the testing at home. And weather's not great when new product comes out at home, so it's tough to give it a fair test. So I'm pretty slow on it. I also don't like to hit balls for hours upon hours to find the right one. So I'm pretty impatient guy. And if I know something I have is working, I don't really want to put the time in testing new stuff. instead of working on my game or working on the course for that week. So I'm probably not the easiest Callaway client in the world, but I gave him some time today, and I think I'm going to put the new 3-wood and 5-wood in this week, so I'm looking forward to that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's tough. Like, you just got back from Hawaii, and it's already Tuesday.
That's right.
It's going to start, so, like, when do you really have time to get going?
And we're playing for a lot of money and a lot of other things that you're looking at, and if you hit one bad shot that you don't know what happened or why, and think for 1 second it may be equipment related, then it can totally screw you up for the rest of the round. So if you know what you have, I kind of like to stick to it, but I'm not reluctant to change. I just like to change to something that's better, and if it's just as good, I have a hard time changing.
Well, what's been your experience with the Maverick Metalwoods so far?
Well, I just got the 3-wood and 5-wood today for the first time, so like both of them, numbers were exactly where I wanted them to be. They were going the distance I wanted them to go. So the look and the shape and the feel were all perfect. So look, I played 2 holes this afternoon, hit the 3-wood twice, and really liked the shape of it. It was easy to draw off the ground, which I have a hard time doing with any 3-wood. So I really liked the way it played there.
What's like your testing process with new clubs? Because I know you don't like to just stand there and beat balls.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to not do that when you're testing. So,
yeah, right.
I just feel like, you know, guys on a range can get in a rhythm and hit the same shot over and over again. I like to get on the course and test it. So my favorite way to test it is for them to send it all to my house, a bunch of different shafts, a bunch of different heads, and let me go figure it out, and then let them put all their fancy TrackMan boxes behind it and see if they like it.
I know there's some listeners at home right now who wish that was the case for them. They just get boxes of clubs sent to their garage.
Well, I'm not afraid to ship them back, but I can't stand hitting 40 or 50, 60 drivers over and over again on the range. And I like to mix in irons in between when I'm doing it just to keep my rhythm. And that way there's all the possibilities are out there when you're on the golf course. You really want to see what it does on the golf course, not the range.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's what actually matters, not optimizing TrackMan numbers.
That's exactly right.
You know, I noticed that you went back to the Great Big Bertha driver, which is something you've kind of gone back to a lot after winning this summer. I think you had the Epic Flash.
I did, yeah,
What made you go back to Old Faithful?
So I cracked my Epic Flash at Medina. There's a pretty good picture of Rory looking at the face of it on the first tee right when all the driver stuff was coming out. So
okay.
It wasn't bad enough that it had to come out of play, but it was bad enough that you can't really trust it. One bad shot one hit in the wrong location could really screw you up. So I hadn't felt comfortable with any of the replacements yet, and the Great Big Bertha for some reason has just always done exactly what I wanted to do. If I hit it in the heel, it's a little cut. If I hit in the toe, it's a little draw. And that's all anybody wants, is for the club to perform the way they expect it to.
And it's got the cool matte black finish on top.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't beat that.
No doubt.
No glare. You also have 2 different putters in the bag. I know that you went back to the old number 7, but it looks like you might be testing a new
The Birds of Prey from Stroke Labs was awesome. I played it in Maui for 4 days, but I don't think it was a fair test because the wind was blowing 30 miles an hour. So I practiced with it today, and it's really solid. I hit it right out of the middle of the face. I think just the look of it and everything, how stable it is really solid. So it's fighting hard to beat out a pretty good putter.
How do you, like, go through testing against different putters? You just hit them on the putting green, bring them out to the course, just decide what you like better?
Yeah,
I
think putters are looks first. You always want to look down and make you want to, when the look makes you want to putt with it, you got a good chance with it. So I like the way that one looked. I like the way it felt. I'm all about keeping that face as stable as possible through the hit. So anything that can add to that, I'm all for, and that putter seemed to do it.
All right. Just a couple other questions. We're here at Palm Desert. How are we feeling for the week?
Right now, feeling pretty terrible after a red eye with 2 toddlers. Other than that, I'll be fine by Thursday. I just trying to catch up on the time zone, get my body in shape to play. I actually played 2 holes today, and that was it. So played 9 holes tomorrow night, and I'll be ready to go by Thursday.
But you've seen this course enough that
you
can get away with
rounds. Yeah,
yeah.
And
yeah.
If the conditions stay like this, it's like playing in a dome. So you don't have to worry too much about the weather. You just got to hit the golf shots.
Yeah. As someone who's been out here for a while, what are like some of your favorite tracks?
You know what, I love tournaments like this in Maui where we ride in golf carts and practice rounds. That's probably my favorite part of the PGA Tour. My favorite tracks on tour are probably Hilton Head and Colonial. I think the old school tight golf courses that really make you think and work the ball off the tee is really beneficial to my game.
How do you prepare for like the Masters? When do you start thinking about the Masters, and what does that preparation actually that week look like?
For me, growing up there, it's it's kind of, now that it's going to be my fifth Masters in a row, it's just part of the process now, part of the scheduling. When I first got in, it was probably the biggest point in the schedule, wanting to get ready, wanting to have my game ready just for that week. But now I just feel as it's another tournament. I got to be prepared to play every week out here. Every week's important. Even though it's a major, I really just need to focus on what I do well and make sure I'm doing those things.
Do you ever text like a previous winner or someone who you know plays well out there and be like, hey, why don't we go out and play Monday? Or is that not really your style?
Monday of the tournament, no, but I use Jeff Knox all the time, the guy that's the marker. He went to Georgia. He's a good friend of mine. Anytime I play a practice round, I play with him. And watching him around the greens there is almost magical. So I pick his brain all the time. He's the guy picking the whole locations and trying to get any type of insight I can from him.
He's kind of a mysterious guy.
Yeah, he is. He's quiet, so he likes to fly under the radar, but he's a lot of fun and really helpful to me.
What's his game really like?
He's a stud. I bet he's, I don't want to call him out, but I bet he's almost 55 years old, maybe older than that. And he, you know, we have serious matches at Augusta National from the back tee, so it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's amazing. All right, Kevin. Thank you so much, and good luck this week.
All right, thanks. Thanks for having me on, man.
All right.
On behalf of the Fully Equipped Podcast and Golf.com, I want to thank Kevin Kisner for the time and for a great interview. Make sure to tune in next week for episode 33, and follow us on Twitter at @fully_equipped and on Instagram @fullyequippedgolf. And we'll see you next week. Thanks.